This is Upstate's HealthLink on air, Linda Cohen along with you. Polio was eradicated in the United States in 1979, and the Global Polio Eradication Initiative has reported a 99% reduction in polio cases worldwide during the last two decades. But in the past 18 months, a rare and mysterious polio-like illness seems to have afflicted about 20 children in California, several of whom have suffered limb paralysis. Health experts are struggling to identify the cause. But here with more on this is Dr. Leonard Weiner. He's professor of pediatrics, pathology, and the division chief of pediatric infectious diseases at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Weiner. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
So help us understand this. What do we know right now about this mysterious polio-like illness?
I think it is accurate to refer to it as polio-like because the presumed cause is a virus that is in the same family as polio, so-called the picornovirus family. Now, the cases in California, in a few instances, a causative agent called enterovirus 68 has been identified. This virus is, and the listeners should know this, is quite rare, but it does seem to be responsible for some, if not all, of this outbreak.
So let me just get this straight. The poliovirus is part of this family you mentioned, and that includes enteroviruses as well as the rhinovirus, which is really the common cold. But I read somewhere there are more than 100 different types of enteroviruses in the world that they've identified.
That's accurate, Linda. And in fact, what we deal with is frequent enterovirus infections that are not serious. Maybe, as the CDC estimates, 10 to 15 million cases annually in the United States, which, by the way, tends to affect children much more so than adults. And these are the common so-called summer colds or sore throats throughout the year that are due to these enteroviruses. Polio is part of that family. We have a vaccine that prevents polio. But we do not have a vaccine for the rest of the enteroviruses.
But as you said, most of these, really, some people don't even experience illness, or they just get mild symptoms like a runny nose or fever or maybe even a skin rash, but nothing as severe as what we've seen in California.
Absolutely true. And in fact, the other part of the family, the so-called rhinoviruses that you reminded us, really cause most of the common colds throughout the world.
So there are some enteroviruses in this 100 that can be more serious. I mean, you mentioned 68 was found to be part of this whole situation in California. What do we know about that virus?
We know that it's quite rare in the United States, and that's important for people to understand. But it does cause serious disease, or at least has the potential to do that. The CDC estimates that from 2000 on, there have been less than 50 documented cases that they know about for this enterovirus 68. And by the way, most of those were not associated with the kind of paralysis that's seen in this outbreak.
But they get things like viral meningitis, encephalitis.
Right.
Basically, it does involve the central nervous system.
Right. So some of these enteroviruses have the potential to do more in the way of infecting the central nervous system than the regular, usual enteroviruses.
And you mentioned there are others.
Yeah.
As
so actually, there's an enterovirus called enterovirus 71, which has been found to cause more central nervous system infection worldwide than even this enterovirus 68. Enterovirus 71 is found in the United States. It's found right now and in recent years in Southeast Asia, where it's been responsible for meningitis and even paralysis cases like we're talking about in California. So enteroviruses 68, 71, occasionally some others, do have the potential to do what has happened in California.
Go ahead.
But it's also pretty rare. These are not really epidemics. These are just clusters of cases which have been found both in the U.S. and worldwide. And yes, they cause significant disease, or can cause significant disease. But parents and the population at large should not really get too worried about this outbreak. This is not going to spread throughout the country. This is not going to be like polio.
It's still a frightening thing, though, to see, you know, children basically become paralyzed. And I'm sure during, I mean, I was probably not alive, or no, I was alive during the polio outbreaks, but I was very, very young at that time when it was really rampant in this country before the vaccine was available. So you can, I mean, I'm sure we all understand that it's a frightening thing to see that kind of thing. And people, it would be the kind of thing people would worry could
yes.
spread.
And truthfully, some of the paralysis that has been noted in this California outbreak doesn't seem to get better. So the children recover, but they do not recover arm or leg weakness or full paralysis. And that's not too different than what used to happen with polio.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Leonard Weiner, and we're talking about the recent outbreak of a polio-like syndrome among some children in California. So when you talk about, are there other enteroviruses that are known to be this dangerous, or is it mostly the 68 and the 71 that you've described?
Many other enteroviruses can cause viral meningitis. In fact, it's probably one of the most common causes of viral meningitis, again telling us that this virus has the potential to involve the central nervous system. The difference there, however, is that that sort of viral meningitis tends to be self-limited. By that, I mean that patients recover completely.
Oh, fully recover.
Yes.
What, if anything, is being done or can be done when you talk about these kinds of viral infections? I mean, obviously with the polio virus, a lot of work went into trying to come up with a vaccine that would prevent it.
Well, as you said, you know, we've essentially eradicated polio almost worldwide. The remaining cases for polio are in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Nigeria, and hard to reach places. Often places where there's a conflict going on, because we do have an adequate vaccine if we can get it to those people. Enteroviral clusters of disease, even when they involve the central nervous system, like this outbreak in California, are very, very rare and tend to be self-limited. People, again, should not be worried that this is going to march across the United States.
But this idea of developing a vaccine at this point is not something that's being undertaken.
It would be very difficult to develop a vaccine for enteroviruses because, as you pointed out to the listeners earlier, there are over 100 types of enterovirus, and one vaccine would not cover all of those. You'd have to have separate components of vaccine for each of those types.
Which would be an enormous undertaking and extremely costly. And as what you're describing is that because there might not be the impetus because there aren't that many cases worldwide.
Probably vaccine development in other areas make more sense than trying to develop a vaccine against this specific enterovirus, enterovirus 68.
Do you worry, or I mean, in your experience in infectious disease, that a virus of this nature could change and become more widespread?
That's not the usual experience with enteroviruses.
So that particular family of viruses do not necessarily transform?
It's not like influenza, which can change its coat, so to speak,
regularly
and often year to year, or even during outbreaks in a given year. These viruses tend to stay more stable. And fortunately, the ones that are responsible for neurologic involvement, particularly neurologic involvement with paralysis, are rare.
Is the CDC actually involved at this time, and what would their role be?
The California Department of Health encephalitis branch is leading this investigation along with the children's hospitals where these youngsters were hospitalized and their viruses identified. The CDC is consulting. I know that's going on, but we should remember that this particular branch of the encephalitis branch of the California Department of Health is very experienced in this area, and they've had other outbreaks of enteroviruses, including outbreaks of 68 small numbers in past years where they've been able to identify that virus.
What do they do, though? Do they get involved in some way to limit transmission? I mean, is there some protocol in place to try to prevent its spread?
Certainly hospitalized cases are isolated, and in that setting we're able to keep transmission from occurring. Out in the real world, that's not so easy because some people could have enterovirus 68 and have nothing more than just fever and a headache, and other people could catch it from them. Transmission occurs, and they could develop more serious disease.
So what determines that? I mean, is there some kind of predisposition that people might have, a lower immune system? Is it age-related, as you mentioned, that most of this hits children as opposed to adults?
But probably all of the above play a part. We don't really know the answer to that question. If we knew what made susceptibility to certain infections different from person to person,
we could win a Nobel Prize.
Right. We'd be a lot smarter than we are now, and somebody could win a Nobel Prize. But the truth is, it's never very clear why some get sicker than others. That was true in the polio epidemic. For every case of paralysis that was identified, there were studies that showed that there were almost 100 cases of patients who maybe just had fever and meningitis, temporary meningitis, bad headache, and they never went on to paralysis. So those are issues that are hard to answer. But in this case, I think, again, it's important to remind everybody of the rarity of this particular cluster of cases.
But while it's rare, do you think that this could have anything to do with the refusal of some parents to vaccinate their children?
I don't believe that this outbreak is related to that. But I think we have good evidence right now in real time in the United States that failure to vaccinate children has led to an increase of vaccine-preventable disease. And I'm sure your listeners know that in New York State, in the New York City area, and in the northern suburbs, there has been a significant increase in measles cases in children. And measles is a totally preventable disease by appropriate vaccination. Very safe vaccine, and yet these cases are occurring in children and young adults who were not vaccinated.
And there was a rise in whooping cough for the same reason.
And whooping cough is a very similar situation, and that's nationwide. And the measles outbreak is also not limited to New York, the West Coast, the Southwest. These are places where measles is on the increase.
So the takeaway in the little bit of time we have left is make sure you vaccinate your children.
Absolutely. On time.
We lose herd immunity. Our whole society loses immunity by those who are not vaccinated.
Yes. When we vaccinate the children, we're protecting everybody.
Well, thank you so much. As you said, it's very interesting, but I think your very key point is not to panic about this particular episode. My guest has been Dr. Leonard Weiner. He's professor of pediatrics, pathology, and the division chief of pediatric infectious disease at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.